Hello and welcome to An Engineer's Journey Through the Book of Mormon. We explore the Book of Mormon with the assumption that science worked the same then as it does now and that the characters are real people with the same types of feelings and tendencies as you and me today. The views and opinions expressed here are strictly those of the narrator and should not be considered official interpretations in any way. And now An Engineer's Journey Through the Book of Mormon. Hello and welcome back. Today we'll cover Alma chapters 49 through 51. Last time we talked about Amalickiah's rise to power as king of the Lamanites, and also about how Captain Moroni and his people prepared for battle by fortifying their cities and also repenting. So today we'll see how their preparations stand up to a Lamanite attack. Also, Nephihah, the chief judge, will die and be replaced on the judgment seat, which leads to our trivia question. Who was the third chief judge over the Nephites? Alma was the first, Nephihah was the second. Who was the third? In Alma 50, verse 37, we read that Nephihah died. Behold, it came to pass that the son of Nephihah was appointed to fill the judgment seat in the stead of his father. Yea, he was appointed chief judge and governor over the people with an oath and sacred ordinance to judge righteously and to keep the peace and the freedom of the people. And verse 40 continues, Now behold, his name was Pahoran. And Pahoran did fill the seat of his father and did commence his reign in the end of the 24th year over the people of Nephi. So Pahoran took his father's place on the judgment seat. And this is a pattern that we'll see. Although they had a system of judges instead of kings, the Nephites still seemed to have the idea of royalty. And there are several mentions throughout the Book of Mormon of people being of high birth. This seems counter to what was supposed to happen back in Mosiah 29 when King Mosiah replaced the monarchy with a system of judges. Mosiah 29:38 says, Therefore they, meaning the people, relinquished their desires for a king and became exceedingly anxious that every man should have an equal chance throughout the land. The goal was for every man to have an equal chance, but when Nephihah died, Pahoran took over the judgment seat from his dad. If you want to find out who became chief judge when Pahoran died, you'll need to turn to Helaman chapter 1. Meanwhile, as we discussed in our last video, Amalickiah had become king of the Lamanites. And now, in chapter 49, he sent a huge army to conquer or destroy the Nephites. He chose Zoramites to lead his army because they had previously been Nephites and were familiar with Nephite cities and strongholds. Their first target was the once great city of Ammonihah. Only 5 to 10 years earlier, this was the city, led by corrupt lawyers after the order of Nehor, that imprisoned Alma and Amulek. But shortly after Alma and Amulek were delivered from prison, Ammonihah was so completely destroyed by a Lamanite army that not a living soul remained. And the smell was so bad that no one could stand to go there for a few years. But very recently, however, people began to repopulate the land, and they had partially rebuilt the city. Having destroyed Ammonihah not long ago, and knowing it was only partially rebuilt, the Lamanites expected an easy victory. Verse 4, But behold, how great was their disappointment! For behold, the Nephites had dug up a ridge of earth round about them, which was so high that the Lamanites could not cast their stones and their arrows at them that they might take effect. Neither could they come upon them, save it was by their place of entrance. Since he knew that his forces would be outnumbered, Moroni used a strategy similar in concept to the one that gave him victory on the shores of Sidon. He constructed a scenario where all hand-to-hand fighting would be done in tight quarters, where the number of Lamanites and Nephites fighting at any one point would be nearly even, or even give an advantage to the Nephites. If you go online and do a Google search for fortified Nephite cities, you'll find several examples of archaeological sites that meet the description. I've included some links in the show notes. Some are in Mesoamerica, some are in Ohio. I'm not sure if any of these are the cities built by Moroni, but they're interesting to look at. They give you a different perspective. When the Lamanites saw Moroni's preparations, they were utterly dumbfounded. They had chosen a city that they assumed would be weakly defended by a sparse population, but instead they found an armored city defended by a small army. They had also learned from their battle with Moroni 2 years earlier by the River Sidon, and they had made themselves armor, and they expected their armor and their numbers to give them an easy victory. Verse 8 says, "But behold, to their utter astonishment, the Nephites were prepared for them in a manner which never had been known among the children of Lehi. Now they were prepared for the Lamanites to battle after the manner of the instructions of Moroni. When the Lamanites saw Ammonihah, they realized it would not be the easy target that they were hoping for. So they called off the attack, and they went back to the wilderness. If Amalickiah had been with them," Moroni says, "he might have ordered them to attack, for behold, he did not care for the blood of his people. But with Amalickiah back in the Nephite capital, the chief captains chose to abandon the assault on Ammonihah and attack the nearby city of Noah instead, supposing that to be the next best place for them to come against the Nephites. Noah, historically, had been the Nephites' least protected city. While they were traveling to the city of Noah, the Lamanite chief captains, perhaps feeling ashamed or cowardly for retreating from Ammonihah, or perhaps just wanting to hype themselves up, they swore an oath that they would destroy the people of Noah. They did not realize that thanks to Moroni's preparations, all Nephite cities had fortifications like Ammonihah, and that Noah was even more heavily guarded than Ammonihah had been. And Moroni had anticipated what they were going to do." Verse 15, "And now behold, this was wisdom in Moroni, for he had supposed that they would be frightened at the city Ammonihah. And as the city of Noah had hitherto been the weakest part of the land, therefore they would march thither to battle, and thus it was, according to his desires." In addition to the city being heavily armored, the forces defending it were led by Lehi, a Nephite warrior who had been at the battle by the River Sidon, and whom the Lamanites, quote, "feared exceedingly." All the Lamanites that survived the battle at Sidon took a lifelong covenant of peace with the Nephites. So how did these invaders know about Lehi? Either some of the soldiers from the battle at the River Sidon had broken their oath and were among the invading army, or else, and this is more likely, or else they had heard stories. Think of how terrifying Lehi must have been to be still discussed in rumors and remembered 2 years later. The Lamanites weren't afraid of Moroni. They weren't afraid of the Nephites. But memories or rumors of that soldier who would chase their whole army across the River Sidon still scared them to death. But although they were now worried and scared, the Lamanite leaders had nonetheless taken an oath to destroy the people of Noah, and so they attacked. Due to the height of the walls surrounding the city, Lamanite soldiers couldn't do any harm to the Nephites inside the fortress without coming inside. And if a soldier wished to enter, he had two options. He could attempt to scale the walls, or he could use the main entrance. If he wished to scale the walls, he first needed to descend to the bottom of a deep ditch and then climb a steep bank of dirt, all while the defenders were raining down arrows and stones on him, and also while wearing, you know, his new armor. First, they attempted entering the city through the entrance, but they were easily slaughtered by the defenders. What made the entrance so easy to guard? Later in the chapter, it is referred to as the pass. Perhaps entering the fortress required going through a narrow opening that only admitted one or two people. Or maybe it was a narrow opening that flared into a wider area filled with warriors. So first you'd have to approach through a hailstorm of arrows and stones, and if you made it through the narrow gap, you'd find yourself surrounded by the fiercest warriors in the whole Nephite army. Verse 20, "Thus they were prepared, yea, a body of their strongest men with their swords and their slings, to smite down all who should attempt to come into their place of security by the place of entrance. And thus were they prepared to defend themselves against the Lamanites." When they realized that entering through the entrance was futile, the Lamanites turned their attention to the walls, hoping to breach them by digging them down. Verse 22, "Now when they found that they could not obtain power over the Nephites by the pass, they began to dig down their banks of earth, that they might obtain a pass to their armies, that they might have an equal chance to fight. But instead, in these attempts, they were swept off by the stones and arrows which were thrown at them. And instead of filling up their ditches by pulling down the banks of earth, They were filled up in a measure with their dead and wounded bodies. The Lamanites continued their attack until all their chief captains had been killed, because it was the chief captains who had sworn to destroy the city. By contrast, not a single Nephite had died. Around 50 men had received arrows to their legs while defending the pass, many of which were very severe, but the armor they wore on their upper bodies had protected against any vital injuries. The Lamanite attackers returned to the land of Nephi and informed Amalickiah of their defeat. When Amalickiah heard that Moroni's preparations had killed thousands of his soldiers and defeated his army, he flew into a rage and swore an oath that he would drink Moroni's blood. But in the land of the Nephites, there was peace and prosperity. Helaman, Shiblon, Corianton, and the sons of Mosiah declared the word of God unto the people, and they paid attention. Even though the Nephite army had pitched a shutout, with not a single Nephite killed, Moroni was not complacent. When he saw that the Lamanites were wearing armor, which had been his innovation at their last battle, he must have realized that nothing he could invent would give them a permanent advantage. He knew the Lamanites would adapt, and so they would have to continuously innovate. So he caused his people to improve their fortifications. They built fortifications in every city and made their fortified cities even stronger. They added pickets to the top of the already high city walls. Verse 4, and he caused towers to be erected that overlooked those works of pickets, and he caused places of security to be built upon those towers. The stones and arrows of the Lamanites could not hurt them. And then, in addition to strengthening their cities with fortifications, Moroni took steps to fortify the Nephite nation as a whole. If we go back to Alma 22, verse 29, Mormon had described the Nephite nation as being surrounded. Here's what it says. And also there were many Lamanites on the east by the seashore, whither the Nephites had driven them. And thus the Nephites were nearly surrounded by the Lamanites. Moroni did not like being surrounded. So he sent a Nephite army into the east wilderness and chased the occupying Lamanites southward, back to their own lands. Moroni then caused Nephites to move in and occupy the east wilderness that the Lamanites had just vacated, and continue eastward until they reached the sea. So the border between the Nephites and the Lamanites was now a straight line from east to west on the south side of the country. With the sea now protecting them to their east, Moroni built fortifications and strongholds all along the southern border. He also built new cities, some of which were named Moroni, Aaron, and Nephihah, all along this southern line. They also began laying the foundations for many cities further north, including one called Lehi, which was constructed, quote, in a particular manner, whatever that means, by the seashore just north of the city of Moroni. For the next few years, the Nephites prospered, expanded, and strengthened their border. People became rich, they had families. Although they were continuously threatened with the possibility of an invasion, or perhaps because of this, the people were faithful in keeping the commandments. Moroni commented on their happiness and prosperity and reminded the reader that this was in keeping with God's promise that whosoever kept the commandments would prosper in the land. And then verse 23, but behold, there never was a happier time among the people of Nephi since the days of Nephi than in the days of Moroni, even at this time in the 21st year of the reign of the judges. The period of prosperity lasted from the 19th year of the reign of the judges until the 24th year, when there arose an internal conflict. As we mentioned above, the city of Lehi was north along the border of the seashore, and one of its neighboring cities, the city of Morianton, was located just north of Lehi. The border between the cities of Lehi and Morianton was disputed, and some people in Morianton began claiming lands in Lehi for their own. And when the people of Lehi refused to give up their lands, the people of Morianton took up arms against their brethren, and they were determined by the sword to slay them. The people of Lehi were afraid for their lives and fled to Captain Moroni's camp and asked him for help. Morianton, the city's leader, knew that his people were in the wrong, and he feared that Moroni's army was going to come and destroy them. So he encouraged his people to all flee northward, north of the narrow neck of land to a land full of lakes and to resettle there. And they might have been able to sneak away unnoticed, but Morianton had a fierce temper, and one night as they were beginning to depart, he became angry with one of his maidservants and gave her a severe beating. So the maidservant did what the people of Lehi had done. She fled to Moroni's camp, which means it must have been somewhat nearby, and she revealed that Morianton's people were preparing to flee northward. Moroni didn't want them going into the north country because then he'd have a hostile neighbor to the north, and the Nephites would be surrounded again. So he sent an army to intercept their flight. But the army did not catch Morianton's group until they had reached the borders of the land of desolation, way up north, even north of Bountiful, near where the east and west sea came together, separated only by a narrow pass of land. And Moroni's force who caught them was led by a man named Teancum, who was one of the more skilled warriors in the Nephite army. Apparently, Teancum tried to bring Morianton's people back peacefully, but they refused, and a battle began. And it was a quick battle, with the Nephite army overpowering Morianton's army, and Teancum slaying Morianton. Teancum brought Morianton's army back south to Moroni's camp. They made a covenant to keep the peace and were restored to their own lands. They reached a peaceful understanding with the people of Lehi, who were also restored to their own lands. During this same year, Nephi-Hod, the chief judge, died, as we discussed in the trivia question. Alma had attempted to confer the records and other sacred objects to Nephi-Ha, but he would not accept them. So, Alma gave them all to his son Helaman, and that happened earlier in Alma chapter 45. Nephi-Ha's son Pahoran was appointed to fill the judgment seat, and I've wondered about that word appointed. Nephite leadership was determined by popular vote, but it's from that wording that's unclear whether Pahoran was elected or whether he succeeded his father on the judgment seat. Now we're in Alma 51. In Alma 51, we learn that not everyone was happy with Pahoran taking over the judgment seat. Some people, especially those of high birth, wanted to get rid of the democratic government and reinstate a monarchy. Those who wanted a king on the throne were called kingmen. Those who wanted to keep the existing system were called freemen. And they had taken an oath to maintain a free government. This seems to be the same oath that Moroni had invited his men to take in Alma 46 when he introduced the title of liberty. Eventually, they held a ballot or an election, and the freemen won the vote. The kingmen didn't like this, but they were outnumbered and had to keep quiet. Then, after 6 years of preparation, Amalickiah invaded again with his army. His army, it says, was smaller than in previous military actions because they had lost a lot of soldiers in their previous encounters with the Nephites. When the kingmen, who had just lost the election, learned of the invasion, quote, they were glad in their hearts and they refused to take up arms. Before defecting to the Lamanites, Amalickiah had been one of the leaders of the kingmen, and he had promised positions of power to those who were willing to help him become king. Perhaps these kingmen, who were Amalickiah's former friends and colleagues, assumed that they would be given positions of authority if the Nephites were conquered. Or maybe they just refused to fight as a protest. But when Moroni found that the kingmen were refusing to defend their country, he was angry. He had spent more than 5 years building fortifications to keep the Lamanites out, and now he had enemies living among them in Zarahemla. Moroni went to the government and asked for authority to compel the kingmen to take up arms in defense of the country under penalty of death. He had the support of the majority, so the government gave him the authority to require people to defend their country or be put to death. Moroni then marched with his army on the kingmen. More than 4,000 kingmen took up arms against Moroni and were immediately slain, and their leaders were imprisoned to await trial. But while Moroni was dealing with the kingmen, Amalickiah attacked the Nephite cities along the eastern seashore, beginning with the southernmost city of Moroni. It didn't have enough defenders, and so Amalickiah quickly took possession of the city and its fortifications, and its inhabitants were forced to flee. And then he continued north, conquering one city after the other. Moroni, Lehi, Morianton, Omner, Gid, and Mulek, till they had all been captured. Then beyond these towns, at the north of the Nephite nation, where the east and the west sea come close together, was the land Bountiful. As Amalekai's army approached the city of Bountiful, driving the Nephites before them and slaying many, he met a smaller Nephite army led by Teancum. This was the same man who had slain Morianton. And although his army was outnumbered, Teancum's soldiers were better trained. The narrator says, "Every man of Teancum did exceed the Lamanites in their strength and in their skill of war." So Teancum's men slew the Lamanites until nightfall. Amalekai's men camped on the beach. Teancum's men camped between them and the land of Bountiful. That night, Teancum and a servant crept into the Lamanite camp and located Amalekai's tent. Being exhausted from the heat of the day, Amalekai was asleep with all of his guards. So Teancum snuck into the tent, and it says he put a javelin in Amalekai's heart, killing him instantly. Then he returned to the Nephite army and woke everyone up just in case the Lamanites woke and found their leader dead and wanted to attack. I hate to end things on a cliffhanger, but that's where we're at. We'll continue next time. And for now, we have a trivia question. In the Book of Mormon, something happened on the first day of the first month. In other words, New Year's Day. When is New Year's Day mentioned in the Book of Mormon? And what happened? And we will see you next time.